I don't know what happened. So the first cool thing about effect sizes that we just talked about is that effect sizes give us a one-number quantitative summary that can be applied across multiple statistical analyses of different kinds of variables and designs. The second cool thing about effect sizes is that it leads to a discussion of power analysis. It leads to a discussion of how to avoid making type 2 errors and how to check up on type 2 errors. So before we talk specifically about power analysis, what is this? Yeah, I don't know why it's, okay, we gotta do this. Then we come here and do, we'll just make it red. There. All right, you know this table. In the population, truth, which we'll never know for certain, there either is a relationship or there is not a relationship between the variables. We make a statistical decision whether to reject the null or retain the null. If we reject the null, we're deciding there is a relationship. If we have enough statistical power, then we will make a good decision. If we don't have enough power, we make a type 2 error. If you go back and look back when we were talking about type 1, type 2, and type 3 errors, There's a block of code, a block of text at the bottom of each slide that talks about where do these errors come from. And the big difference between type 1 and 3 on the one hand and type 2 errors on the other hand is that only type 2 errors are tied to sample size. If your sample is too small, you are more likely to commit type 2 errors, to miss effects that are really in the population. And so when there really is a relationship, if we have enough power, we properly reject the null. If we don't have enough power, we improperly retain the null. Now, thinking as a researcher for a minute, we know that statistical power can be increased by two things. Bigger effect. Does it make sense? It's easier to find a bigger effect. And larger sample sizes. Because effects are more believable from a large sample than a small sample. Now, like I say, thinking as a researcher, which of these do you have more control over? The size of the effect in the universe or the sample size in your study?
The sample size.
And so the purpose of power analysis is going to be to check up on your sample size and whether it's a good idea. That's what power analysis is all about. Power is also called sensitivity. Power is the ability to reject the null when the null is false. That's the most common statistical expression. Power is the ability to reject the null when the null is false. Researchers often slide that same thing correctly just a little bit and say, power is the ability to find an effect when there is an effect. Now, those are the same statement. The first one concentrates on rejecting nulls. The second concentrates on finding effects. They are the same thing. Being able to reject the null when the null is false and being able to find an effect when there really is an effect are exactly the same thing. But the different expressions are common with different groups of people. So statistical power is the ability to reject the null based on the sample data when there really is a correlation between the variables in the population. Statistical power is primarily about sample size needed to detect an R of a certain size with how much confidence. Statistical power tells the probability of rejecting the null when it should be rejected. Power is an estimate. If we're looking for this effect size, with this much power, what's the probability we're going to reject the null? It really is a probability estimate. There are two kinds of power analysis. An a priori power analysis is done before the study to decide what sample size you should use. You have an effect size estimate because you looked at other people's F's and R's and chi-squares translated them to effect sizes and have an idea of what's the common effect size in your area. And you use that to decide how big your sample should be. So a priori power analysis is all about avoiding type 2 error. Post hoc power analyses are when you have already done the analysis and already retained the null. And the question is, p is greater than 0.05, I'm going to retain the null, what's the probability I'm committing a type 2 error? So we have p to estimate the probability of a type 1 error if we reject the null, and we are able by post hoc power analysis to estimate the probability of a type 2 error when we retain the null. All right, type 2 error is about missed effects, retaining the null when there really is a relationship. Power is the antithesis of risk of a type 2 error. The probability or risk of a type 2 error is 1 minus the power. Power is 1 minus the risk of a type 2 error. So, match these up. 40% chance of a type 2 error goes with 60% power. The risk of a type 2 error and power have to add up to 1, or 100, or 100%, different scales. A power of 40 gives us a type 2 risk of 60. A 30% risk is a 70% chance to find an effect. And 30% power is a 70% chance of missing an effect. Notice what I've done here. I've bounced back and forth between missing type 2 errors, finding, correctly rejecting. There's no only one set of words people use. Sorry, we're used to this by now. You've got to translate back and forth between power, ability to reject the null, ability to find an effect. They're all the same. Lack of power. Going to retain the null when you shouldn't. Going to miss effects when you shouldn't. They're all the same. So here's the power table we will use. There are lots of different power tables. The reason we're going to do this is pretty straightforward. We're going to use this one power table the whole way through the year, because this power table can be used for all the things we're going to do, nearly all the things that we're going to do all year. There are other power tables. I think to do the stuff that we're going to do, if you use Jacob Cohen's power tables from his book called Power Analysis, which almost everybody has on their shelf and some people have actually read, I think you need 14 tables. Herb Friedman liked getting things down to one list. Yes, he's one of my heroes. I might actually have a stats crush on Herb. The family was nice enough to let us take his original table, which is not as closely populated, and Cohen's family was nice enough to let me have some of their stuff and to jack this up to a table that has fewer holes. So here's how it works. These are your R's. This is the R value that's involved. This is the power that's involved. That's S. That's a thing called S. S is the number of people involved in the study we're looking for. The application of S varies a little bit. We'll show you. The standard power, the industry standard for power is 0.8. In the pink things and on the quiz and homework, I might say, find me the sample size I should use for this effect size and this much power. If I tell you how much power, use that much power. I might tell you, I want you to find me the amount of sample I need to have this much risk of a type 2 error. If I tell you the error risk, subtract it from 1, that's your power, use the power. Right? Because you've got to be able to move back and forth between this is the risk and this is the power. 1 minus each gives you the other. If I don't say anything, assume the industry standard and use 0.8. How are we doing? It's all these local rules that we have to have. We'll show you. So let's start simply. I think I'm looking for an effect size of 0.3. I want 80% power. Let's go to the table. 0.3, 80% power, 82. I want 82 people in my study. You tell me, but I can only afford 50. Well then, you're going to have between 50 and 60% power, which means you're going to have between a 40 and a 50% chance of a type 2 error. How do you feel about that? I'll go find the other 32. Thanks, I'll be back. How are we doing? So, I'm looking for a correlation of 0.2, and I want 90% power. How many people do I need?
255.
That's, we good? Okay. Well, the undergraduates take a few more before they, okay. You're hurting me. Now, the catch is, there's always a catch in here. The catch is you need some idea of what size correlation you're looking for. Literature review, pilot study, or the old small, medium, large are the usual solutions, but you have to start an a priori power analysis with an R. You can't say, go find me the sample size I should use. For what R? Oh, I don't know. Just go find me a sample size. Remember that when you pair the typical effect size in behavioral research and the typical sample size in behavioral research, you get right around here. .25s are fairly typical. 60 people are fairly typical. That gives us 50% power, which means 50% chance of a type 2 error. That's where those big we make mistakes comes from. So how do you really do an a priori power analysis? The basis for a worthwhile a priori power analysis is a good set of effect size estimates, one for each of the pairwise comparisons, but where do we get these from? Most studies are a combination of replication and new comparisons. Look at the replications to see if embedded in that is something that's close to your research. It's unlikely that there's nothing out there that's anything like, or I'm sorry, it's unlikely that there's nothing out there that isn't similar to yours. You get as close as you can and you go from there. For example, two conditions in the study are replications. One is new based on a lit review. Based on the lit review, we expected means of here. We also know the standard deviations around here. So we plug that into the computator and we get back. We're looking for a correlation of about 0.24. We go to the power table with a 0.24, round that up to 0.25, and we need 120 people. People always, I don't want to say always, people routinely walk in and say, I have no idea where to get the effect size. So we start. Bring in your stack of stuff. Which of these is closest? Let's turn that into an effect size and start there. Post hoc power analysis. I got a correlation of 0.3, but because of my sample size, P is greater than 0.05. What's the chance I've committed a type 2 error? We're about to do what I call the dance of the type 2 error. The dance of the type 2 error is a waltz. It's a three-step. Because you need three pieces of information. You need the sample size, and you need the effect size. From that, you will calculate the power. And from the power, you'll know the rest of the dance, the probability of a type 2 error. So, S for a correlation is defined as degrees of freedom plus 2. So I've got degrees of freedom 30 plus 2 is 32. I'm going to go to the table with the column of 0.3 and an S of 32. Oh, that's not the right thing to do. So 30 and 32. You don't always find the exact number that you want. This is a table of approximations. This is a game of estimation. This is not a game of calculation. And so 32 is in between 33 and 24. So we have between 40% power and 30% power. How we doing? If we had 40% power, we would have a 60% chance of a type 2 error. If we had 30% power, we would have 70% chance of a type 2 error. So, since we have between 30 and 40% power, we have between 60 and 70% chance of a type 2 error, and that's all the precision we need. So now that you know that you've retained this null, how do you feel about it knowing that you got a 60 to 70% chance of being wrong? Not good, but you're stuck with it. This is why you do a priori analyses ahead of time so you don't back yourself into this particular corner. Now, the informal version of this goes like this. I got an effect of 0.3. It's a medium-sized effect. Is that likely to be big enough to be interesting? Yes, it's medium-sized. It's in the middle of the distribution. It's common, but it's a null. When I get an effect that's big enough to care about and it's a null, I have a power problem. I can do the proper power analysis, but I can immediately do an informal power analysis. It goes like this. Is that effect big enough to care about? Yep. Did I retain the null? Yep. Do I have a problem? Yep. I have a power problem. Let me show you where this is captured. Power table, power and effect size rules. Down here. Two things I want to show you. These bottom two tables. If P is less than 0.05, reject the null. You know that. A type 1 and a type 3 error are possible. A type 2 error is not. This is a question on the quiz for every one of the statistical models. Look at the result. Tell me what errors are possible. If P is less than 0.05, we reject the null. A 1 and a 3 are possible. A 2 is not possible. You cannot reject the null and not have found something. If we retain the null, because P is greater than 0.05, only a type 2 error is possible. 1 and 3 are not. How are we doing? All right. Do I have a power problem? Power is the ability to reject the null. So if P is less than 0.05, I rejected the null, and I must not have a power problem. I had enough power to reject the null because I had enough power. If P is greater than 0.05, we have to also look somewhere else to decide if we have a power problem or not. If R is less than 0.1, in other words, if we have a null that's too small to care about, that's not a power problem. That's just a small effect. However, if P is greater than 0.05, so we retain the null, and the R is greater than 0.1, that effect is big enough to care about. It's a null. We have a problem. It's a power problem. How are we doing? Yes?
What if it's the third one with an R greater than 0.1? Is there a possibility of it not being a power problem, of your hypothesis just being still wrong?
This has nothing to do with the hypothesis. This is all about statistical conclusion validity, the relationship between what we found and what's true in the population. Now, it could be that our R is wrong, and it's not a good representation, but that R is all we got. We only got an R and a P, and what we're trying to do is sort out how to think about them using them together. So once you have an R, you are now betting the farm on that R, and you've got to decide which of these three situations you're in, assuming that it's a representative R. There's nothing in this discussion that can take into account whether you got it right or not, whether the R is right or not, because this is a null hypothesis significance testing centered thing, so it's just about whether or not there's an effect, given the R you have and the p-value that comes from it. All right, so that's a really good what about, but not for this, because this starts with the P and the R. If you doubt the P and the R, don't start here. Does that help? Here's my favorite stupid example. You got $100 in your pocket, or a mask. Let's say this is a really good mask. You got $100 in your pocket, you're walking through the mall, and you see the ugliest freaking shirt you've ever seen. Oh my God, that thing's ugly. I want nothing to do with that. It costs $150. You only have $100. Do you have a problem? No. You don't want the shirt. The shirt isn't cool enough to care about. That shirt's R is less than 0.1. You walk a little farther down the street, and there is the shirt that you've dreamed of, actually dreamed of, in your dreams. Costs $104. Do you have a problem? The effect's big enough to care about, the shirt's cool enough to care about, and you don't have $104. You have a money problem. It's that simple. Not being able to afford something doesn't tell you if it's a problem or not. Not being able to afford something that you want is a problem. Not being able to reject and null on an effect that's big enough to care about is a problem. Retaining the null on an effect that's too small to care about isn't a problem. Now, as you suggest, you got all the normal problems of, did I get it right? Did I screw this up somehow? Is there measurement or sampling or confounding that gave me the wrong R? But you start here with an R and a P and you decide, so how do you feel about that? The other thing that's on here is that when you're using the power table, it rounds funny. I know. I'm sorry. But we did over 12 million simulations to get to this. The power table behaves better when you round thusly. So, a 1, a 2, or a 3 all round down to 0. 4 rounds up to 5. Now, normally, 3 would go with 4 up to 5. In normal rounding, 3 would... No. So it's 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Similarly, 6, 7, and 8 round down to 5. Only 9 rounds up. Jeez, Cal, do you sit around late at night and come up with this? Yeah, kind of. We were having trouble with the power table behaving itself, and so I have a friend that has a Cray 2 computer in his basement. That's one of the biggest single station supercomputers on the planet. And so we spent a weekend hacking into his Cray 2 so that we can run SPSS on his Cray 2. Neither Cray nor SPSS were particularly happy about that, but it's Mikey's computer. We can do what we want. All right. Four analyses from the same study with an N of 21. Big effect, significant. Clearly we have enough power because it's significant. From the post hoc power analysis, if we plug this in with this N and this p-value, we find out that we had 90% power. For the next study, though, we should use 20 people for a 0.8. In other words, before you use the sample size that this significant effect was based on in your next study, stop and check. Here we go. I got a correlation of 0.3 and it's significant. I had enough power. I had about 50% power, and if I'm looking for to replicate that, I ought to go get 82 people. Not stick with the 21. I got a correlation of 0.2, which is non-significant. I don't think I had enough power. Why? Because the effect is big enough to care about, but it's a null. That informally to me means I don't have enough power. And son of a gun, I only had 27% power. And if I were going to go looking for this again, I need 191 people, not 21. Now I have what I would call not a power problem because the effect is less than 0.1. It's too small to care about. It's an ugly shirt. I don't have a problem. I have virtually no power. And if I want to chase this sumbitch, it's going to be expensive. Sometimes you just can't chase an effect. It's a heartbreaker. But sometimes you just can't chase an effect. This, by the way, is where meta-analyses come from. Because when you start taking those small effects that were non-significant because we couldn't run a big enough sample size, you can stack them up together and allow them to accumulate towards a meta-analytic interpretation and result. So the caveat from this is, enough post-hoc and might not be enough a priori end. When you're trying to decide what sample size to use, don't look at other significant effects to decide what sample size to use. Take their effect size and do your own a priori power analysis. Yes? Oh, so what I did here is I took the 0.55, and the 21, I'll find it here in a second. Okay, 0.55 and the 21, and that means I've got about this much power. I'm sorry, I got about this much power. All right? Then I said, okay, if I'm going to have that effect size, and I want 90% power, 80% power, I only need this many. That number's wrong. That should be 18. I'll fix that. Nobody ever is out on this end of the table. Nobody's ever looking for an effect that big. Does that make sense? So I started with my result and my sample size. And using that, I'm right around in here. This tells me how much power I had. And then I say, all right, for this, if I want 80% power, what sample size do I need?